KPCW News Time is 8:06. Well, as I mentioned before, there's some really nasty wintry mix coming down in here in Old Town. We got Cedric Haynes on the line to tell us about what we have to look forward to in the weather this weekend. What's it looking like, Cedric?
Yeah, I'll tell you what. Speaking of that wintry mix, get ready for more of that as we go throughout the day. This is just a little appetizer this morning of that activity moving on through. We're looking at temperatures pretty much at their warmest right now. We're likely going to be seeing those temperatures falling as we go into later this afternoon once that cold front moves on through. So the roller coaster ride with our temperatures will also continue. And again, as that cold front moves through, we're expecting a heavier band of precipitation to develop, especially around the midday time frame, I think, for us as we get towards Park City and then drifting into the Heber Valley into the afternoon hours. That's when we could see a heavy burst of rain and snow mix that will likely quickly switch over to snow as those temperatures drop off quickly there. And that could lead to some accumulations as well. We could be looking at about 1 to 3 inches for many areas there in the Wasatch Back, probably closer to 3 inches as you get towards the Park City area. But as you get down into the Heber Valley, we could see a nice covering up to an inch or so, inch or two out there for us as we go throughout this afternoon and this evening, as those snow showers will likely linger into the evening hours as temperatures will continue to fall, and that will set us up for a frigid start as we get towards our Saturday morning. It'll wake up with some sunshine out there, just a few high clouds left over, but temperatures will start off into the mid to upper teens across both Park City and the Heber Valley. And as we go throughout the day, get ready for a high temperature below freezing in the Park City area, with highs struggling to get just above freezing, maybe in the mid-30s in the Heber Valley. And then, yes, the temperatures really plummet as we head towards our Saturday night into Sunday morning with clear skies and light winds. We're going to be looking at our overnight low temperatures dropping down into the single digits across the area. So it's been a little while, so we're going to have to get back used to that winter-like chill compared to these like early spring temperatures we've kind of been playing with here over the past couple of days. And don't worry, as we go throughout the day on Sunday, we'll see that sunshine, but highs will likely hold in the 20s in Park City and only climb into the lower 30s as you get towards the Heber Valley. And then beyond that, we've got more single-digit temperatures heading your way to kick off the new work week. So starting off with temperatures in those single digits on your Monday morning, and high temperatures once again struggling to barely get to the freezing mark as we get into the afternoon, despite having all of that sunshine across the area. Enjoy the break, though, from the active weather. We should be dry for yours basically from Saturday afternoon all the way through most of our Monday as well, even into Tuesday. But we'll start to see some clouds on the increase by Tuesday afternoon. We start off Tuesday morning with temperatures once again back down into the single digits. And in the afternoon hours, we see our highs not getting above freezing. And then as we go into your Wednesday, those clouds will really thicken up. We've got probably the coldest morning heading our way on Wednesday morning, with low temperatures closer to zero, both in Park City and the Heber Valley, and then highs only in the 20s as we go throughout the afternoon. That's going to be with a second front that's going to move through, and that will lead to a good chance potentially of a significant snow event for the area as we get towards next Thursday into Valentine's Day. So something that the hearts may desire, especially for those folks who love to be out there skiing and enjoying the slopes.
Yes, Cedric, it's been a long time since we've had a really good significant snowfall. Look, yes. We're looking at something maybe later this week. When you look into your longer term crystal ball, are we seeing any potential for some more snow activity coming up in the next couple of weeks?
That's a great question. I am actually seeing that. I do think we're starting to see this pattern change. This week is going to be the beginnings of that, but we're going to see more storminess happening across the area, and with colder air that's going to be kind of settling across the western half of the country instead of the eastern half of the country. That's what we like to see a more active weather pattern, and yes, more snow. And so I think as we get by the end of this month, we'll start to add on to those snow totals quite a bit out there.
Okay, Cedric, thanks, and have a good weekend.
You too. Thank you so much.
Wintry mix is done to conditions in the backcountry. On the phone, we've got Greg with the Utah Avalanche Center.
Yeah, good morning. I sure love following Cedric because they make they make my job so easy, and they had such promising news looking ahead. Yeah, we have a winter storm on the way. Strong winds ahead of this storm. We've had a lot. We've had strong winds for about the past week, and they've been relentless, and they're just continuing to blow again today. There's not a whole lot of fresh snow or loose snow out there available for transport. But there's going to be some snow available this afternoon, that's for sure. So we're expecting a cold front midday or so, periods of heavy snow and winds this afternoon. It looks like most of the snow is going to be arriving at Frontal Passage. So I think we're going to see the heaviest precipitation this afternoon. And with that, I'm expecting some sensitive soft slabs. So this is going to be wind-driven snow. As well as storm snow. When you get heavy periods of snowfall, the storm snow can actually be quite sensitive as it's falling. So we're going with an overall moderate danger at mid and upper elevations today. But in the forecast I posted today, I mentioned that it's possible we could bump into considerable avalanche danger during periods of heavy snowfall. And when you have a considerable avalanche danger, that introduces the possibility of natural avalanches. So if you're getting out this afternoon, pay attention, please, for changing conditions, especially during any period of wind drifting or heavy snowfall. Looking in the future, we're seeing some storminess. You just heard from Cedric, it's going to be quiet, cold this week, this coming week. But looking ahead, looks like we're, from mid-February through the end of February, we're expecting some stormy weather. So that's good news for snow lovers. And we sure need the water in our snowpack. We're at about 75% of normal. So we need to catch up. And we're more than halfway through the winter. So let's hope for a snowy second half of February.
Okay. Thanks, Greg.
Thank you so much. Bye-bye.
Coming up in just a moment, we're going to get a community update about Hideout from Jan McCosh. Then we will visit with Councilmember Tana Tolley on last night's Park City Council meeting. We'll then chat with Ryan Mack about the upcoming ski-joring event in Salt Lake City this Saturday. And we'll finish our hour with a quick preview of this summer's Concerts on the Slopes program with Park City Performing Arts Director of Fun, Ember Conley. Well, here to give us an update on what's going on in the town of Hideout is Town Administrator Jan McCosh. Good morning, Jan, and thanks for coming in this morning.
Good morning, Roger. Thanks for having me.
Well, let's get started by talking about a new recreation facility that I understand is opening up at Ross Creek. Can you tell us about it?
Sure. The State Park, Jordan L., has opened Ross Creek. It's mainly for non-motorized vehicles, and we are looking forward to seeing what we can do to develop and create some opportunities, enhance that area, and the town owns 10 acres that abuts that entry, so we're getting together with our residents and seeing what they want to put there.
Yeah, what kinds of things are being considered for that area?
You know, we had an open house and invited the public in, and what they wanted was a mixed use, places to gather. They were interested in cross-country skiing, snowshoeing, active recreation, and especially places to meet up, which we don't have in Hideout right now.
And do you have like a parks department? Do you have a sort of an infrastructure within Hideout that will help sort of get this developed?
You know, we're looking at putting together a public-private partnership, and that may be the best vehicle to getting what the people want, collaborating with a developer, and creating great things for the community, both for Hideout and for all of us in the region.
Okay. I wanted to touch base on the fire station. For a long time, there's been concern about sort of the lack of firefighting capability in that part of our area. Where do things stand with the fire station in Hideout?
Yeah, that's happy news. We did a grassroots effort. We have a lot of amazing people in the community, and they put together funds. We raised funds and collaborated with a developer. A developer is loaning us the property, and we put together a functioning fire station. It's Station 56, and it's up and running. We've got a lot of great things that have come of that. Residents have reported that they've been able to get discounts on their homeowners insurance. Because we have people outside of 5 miles of a station, or we used to, people were having problems getting coverage. So we've got residents reporting good things there, as well as we've had a number of incidents where the EMS has been able to respond to people in the area and reporting 7 to 15 minute reduction in response time. And you know, when you have an emergency, mm-hmm. that can be a life-saving event to have that EMS available.
And what's the timeline for a more permanent facility?
We're looking at within 2 years moving to a permanent location. We're working with UDOT and the fire station in a collaboration on a permanent, which would be on the east side of 248 there in Hideout.
I want to ask you about where things stand with respect to the annexation of Richardson Flat. Where are things right now?
You know, when we put together that annexation, it was over 5 years ago, mm-hmm. and it has a new landowner. So we have not yet met with the landowner. We're looking forward to doing that. In fact, next week, we're getting together to meet up, get to know each other, and work on creating a vision.
Am I correct that the litigation part is over, that the legal impediments to that annexation have basically been cleared out?
That's correct.
Okay. And how much land would be added to Hideout as part of the annexation?
About 350 acres.
Okay. Now, is the new where does the sort of Larry H. Miller organization fit into these plans?
That is the current landowner. Mm-hmm. And we will be meeting with them next week.
What was it about this package that was attractive to Hideout? Why did you want to annex the land?
You know, Hideout is an interesting city. It's basically sprawl, or it was. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we have such great residents. We're just coming together and trying to figure out something that is sustainable and, you know, something beneficial for all of the residents. And we need commercial. And, you know, right now we've got 1,500 residents who are driving on 248 to come into Park City and creating, you know, a lot of traffic issues. And we need basic services. We need a grocery store. We need gas. And right now, you know, that's a problem. They have to drive into Camas or drive into Park City. And it's a very similar demographic to Park City. And we clog up that 248. So we're looking forward to collaborating and working with others in the region on creative solutions on how we minimize traffic, minimize pollution, and, you know, create something good.
Has the Miller organization given you any sense of what they want to do with that land at this point?
They have not. You know, I have been so impressed, though. We submit for a grant, and they're just such community collaborators. We're really looking forward to this development partner. And, you know, they're there at Mountainland Association of Governments supporting, and just very collaborative in their way of building cities.
And just so I understand, the previous owner, they did have some specific ideas of what they wanted to do with that land. And I take it we do not know the extent to which Larry H. Miller would have some of those same objectives and plans.
That's correct.
Okay. I understand Hideout has an interlocal agreement with MIDA. What is that about?
Yeah, we're Project Area 4 in MIDA. And so, you know, MIDA is an economic development project of the state. And so Project Area 4 has TIF on it. And
I'm sorry, what's TIF?
TIF, yes, sorry.
That's usually what I get into with my dog. We get into a TIF.
Right.
But anyway.
Tax increment financing. Mm-hmm. So the taxes go to the project area,
okay,
to MIDA. And then we get a share of that. So basically, it incentivizes projects financially.
Mm-hmm.
So that MIDA project is just cruising right along. It's not, you know, it doesn't get the people, the residents don't really get involved. It's a project in and of itself, and it's booming.
And what would it entail? What is the nature of the project itself?
Well, it's got seven hotels slated, so it's very much about resort development, and it seems to be mostly second home owners. It's destination development.
And is that, I'm a little confused. I know about the MIDA project over in the East Village area. What is happening in Hideout with MIDA?
You know, our 10 acres is in the MIDA project, so we're just beginning. So once you have, you know, 3 years of cash flow, you can take the money and you can bond on that and you can begin development. And that's the beginnings. That's what we're doing, and we're trying to find out what the residents want, so we just maximize that area. So a win-win for everyone.
So are these the same 10 acres we were just talking about earlier, where you're going to have the recreational area?
That's correct.
The same Ross Creek area. Okay, so MIDA, that is part of the MIDA area, and that's part of the public-private partnership that you talked about would be under MIDA's jurisdiction.
Correct.
Okay. Well, Jan, before we go, talk to us a little bit about what your priorities for the town are over the next few months. What do you want to accomplish this year?
Well, for sure we want to get this fire station up and running, because, you know, wildfires are a real issue. Safety with the California wildfires, we know that insurance is a big concern. We're working with Wasatch County Fire to get our code right, so we have, you know, we create the balance between beautiful landscaping but fire-wise. So we want to really focus on getting things right as we are developing, and also focusing on commercial, focusing on places for our residents to gather, to have community, and do that smartly and in collaboration with all of us in the region.
You know, Jan, it's interesting because we've talked to some homeowners insurance people about fire risk in recent months, and some communities are really getting much more proactive on zoning and other requirements to increase the hardening, if you will, the firewise protection of their areas. Things like, you know, requiring no mulch within a certain number of feet of a building. Are you looking at the range of potential things to sort of help limit the fire danger in Hideout? And I know, obviously, the first step of getting that fire station up is critical, but are you looking at other kinds of proactive measures that I think people aren't used to thinking about?
Right. Yes, exactly. We're trying to, the fire department would like us to regulate what distance the vegetation is planted near a homeowner or near a home. And we're looking at changing our code so we are compliant and working with the fire department on those issues.
Okay. Jan, anything else you want to touch on before we go?
No. Thank you for having me. A lot of good things are happening in Hideout, and just looking forward to making this a better place.
Okay. Thanks for spending time with us. Well, Utah lawmakers have passed a bill prohibiting collective bargaining. A teachers union president and former Park City educator says this will harm students. KPCW's Christine Weller reports.
The Utah Senate passed HB 267 Thursday on a 16-13 vote. The bill bans collective bargaining, a process where an employer and a union negotiate wages, benefits, and other aspects of worker compensation. Lawmakers had discussed a compromise with unions, but abandoned those efforts Wednesday and largely restored the bill to its original wording. That means collective bargaining would be prohibited across all public sector organizations like public schools, law enforcement, and fire departments. Under the bill, new labor organization employees would also be excluded from participating in Utah retirement systems, which provides retirement and insurance benefits to public employees. Lawmakers said the move back to a complete ban on collective bargaining was because there was no consensus on the neutrality of the proposed substitute to the bill. Utah Education Association President Renee Pinckney said her union felt the bill's passage was retribution.
The Utah Education Association is deeply, deeply disappointed and quite frankly betrayed by the legislative process. An ultimatum was given to public sector unions that there needed to be 100% that went neutral, and some of them didn't meet that demand.
Pinckney taught in the Park City School District for 26 years and was a local education association president. She said collective bargaining allowed Park City to negotiate policies to improve working conditions, which in turn improves student learning outcomes. The bill now heads to Governor Spencer Cox, and UEA is strongly urging him to veto the legislation. If Cox signs HB 267 into law, it will take effect July 1st. Christine Weller, KPCW News.
Well, the Park City Council held its regular meeting last night. Here with a debrief from the council meeting is Councilmember Tana Tolley. Good morning, Tana.
Good morning, Roger.
You guys got through a lot of stuff last night, I understand.
We did, but I was thinking, instead of an interview, maybe we should all just get together and pray to the snow gods, because I don't know what's happening out there, but this is awful.
It was really nasty coming in this morning, this rain-snow mix. It's just enough to make you slip on the sidewalk and fall down and go boom.
For sure.
Okay. One item I know that you touched on last night were changes to the Bonanza Flat Conservation Area, or BFCA, which always makes me want to sing YMCA, the BFCA parking issue. Tell us about it.
Yes. So Bonanza Flat, as we know, is a very, very popular area for not only our residents, but for our guests as well. And with that has come quite a bit of cars and congestion and people parking all along the road. Many tickets were given out last year. And, you know, as we work with our partners at Utah Open Lands, we've been working on how do you ensure that we have our conservation values, protecting the land, but also ensuring that people have access to it. So we had a presentation last night that we actually kept calling a love fest because we had so many departments involved and Utah Open Lands involved, with also Mountain Trails, who wasn't there, but they're all always involved as well. But really coming together to look at what this summer is going to look like up there. And so we made three big changes. And with everything, these are dynamic and they can change at any time. But we had instructed our team last summer to take a look at paid parking. And one of the reasons for that is that on the other side of the mountain in Big Cottonwood Canyon, they are charging at trailheads now. So we're starting to see this trend happen throughout all ski towns and recreation areas. And so we asked them to come back and give us a little bit of some insight into what was going on. And they came back with three plans. And so one of them is going to be paid parking for all of the spots up there. There's 137 parking spots, and those will go into effect this summer. However, if you are an 84060 resident, we wanted to ensure that you weren't paying for parking. So residents will be able to register their license plate, and they would do that through our parking department, and then they will be able to use that access without having to pay for it.
Is that the first time that's happened, that you've actually had a sort of monopoly-like free parking sticker essentially on your license plate?
Yes, this is different than the hang tags that I personally have in Old Town, because they're using
it's
a different
right
kind
on
of
license.
System.
Yeah.
Right. So we do realize, though, that this will cause some challenges, and we wanted to ensure it's equitable. So we are now going to take our Transit to Trails program, which has been very successful, and have our transit department run it. So basically what will happen is our purple route that has been going towards the Montage and up into Empire Pass will continue on up into Bonanza, and that will happen Friday through Mondays, July 3rd through October 20th from 6 a.m. to 6 p.m., with 15-minute frequency, and these will be what we call like cutaway buses. So they're gonna be smaller than our big buses, and they will take 15 to 17 passengers, and we're thinking approximately 60 people per hour will be able to go up there, and they will also include bike racks.
And will there be a park and ride, essentially? Where would you park to catch that bus?
It will be similar to what, so let's say you live in Thanes Canyon and you got on a bus in Thanes Canyon. It would bring you to the transit center, and then you would get on the purple bus to head up. So it's all going to be just similar to any sort
of
bus.
So it's just integrated into the
normal
transit
system. Integrated into it, yes.
Okay. I want to take one quick step back. Remind people a little bit about the history of the property and where is it?
Yeah, so Bonanza Flat was purchased by the city and many other stakeholder groups as well. But this was slated to be a golf course and lots of homes and perhaps a giant hotel. And the community came together and said they wanted to purchase this property, which I think is probably one of the best things we've ever done. I absolutely love it up there. I trail run up there quite a bit in the summer. And it is located at the top of Empire Pass, where Guardsmen passes, and it, you know, meets the Wasatch County borderline and meets our borderline.
So it's interesting. It is property that the city acquired that isn't within the city.
Correct.
Okay. what has been the overall level of usage since the acquisition? And has there been any inappropriate use? I know at the beginning people were worried that people would use this as an opportunity to go snowmobiling.
Yes, there has been some. We were told last night, and in our packet, it did talk a little bit about some vandalism that has happened up there. So everything from cutting locks to, I was up there actually one time cross-country skiing, and I got all the way out on the track, on the classic track, and as I was coming back, someone had come by with a snowmobile and taken the track out. So just in that hour that I was out. So that was a fun one to watch me go back up. But yes, there has been some vandalism. There has been some things that we don't want to see happening up there. But we're doing our best to combat those and to work with the Wasatch County Sheriff and ensure we're protecting the land and keeping it for
recognizing there's always going to be some leakage, if you will, or some inappropriate use. I take it it's not been a huge problem.
It is a problem. It's a problem. Okay. I don't know if I can rate how big of a problem.
Okay. Treasure Hill. Let's talk a little bit about, first of all, what is the Treasure Hill Conservation Easement? What was it?
Right. So another project that I'm so happy that we preserved is Treasure Hill, which we are looking at right now. And this had also been slated to be, at one point, 9 hotels and would have had a huge impact on what our old town, what we would see in Old Town, our scenic view here. So this was also purchased by the city, and we had a 2-year clause that there wouldn't be a conservation easement in those first 2 years. And so since then, COVID happened, and during that time, we've still been working with our friends at Summit Land Conservancy and getting this conservation easement worked out. And so we are at the very, very tail end of this. And Summit Lands came to us last night and said there's just a few more details that they wanted to ensure that they've dotted their I's and crossed their T's on, and asked us just to continue it for, I think it's just maybe 6 weeks to 2 months. And that's based on our agenda. But we are really excited to get this moving so that we have a conservation easement up there and we protect that land.
You know, now that the city owns the land, even the lawyer in me is having trouble understanding, why is this so hard? It seems to me like you own it, you put a conservation easement on it. What's the 2 years for?
I wasn't on council then, so I can't answer that part of the question. I will say there are lots of documents, because there are different MPDs on here as well. The Sweeney family, who owned the property before, had different had an MPD that is different than what is in our historic district. So there's a lot of documents. And the lawyer in me, which doesn't exist, has no idea.
Okay.
Why there's so many words in there?
I think what you're saying is there was pre-existing, you know, land use restrictions, and it's just, and there's also existing usage that you're allowed to continue. So I think there's a lot of complexity.
Yes, of course.
Okay. So it's basically what's happened is that's been put off as the process continues to go forward.
Yes, and we do hope that we will continue to work with Summit Lands. I am also their liaison and work very closely with Cheryl, and we'll get this across the finish line, because it's very important to me, it's very important to the team, and it is very important to our council that this is done in as quick time as possible.
I understand the Song Summit was looking to use some city facilities this year. What were they looking for?
Yeah, so the Song Summit is, for those that don't know, has been, I believe this is their 4th year, and they are, they bring in artists and they bring in songwriters and it's a small music festival, but not the typical like Coachella or Lollapalooza that we're looking at. It's more intimate. However, they do they do have two large concerts that last year they did at the Canyons. And so they absolutely love being inside Park City. And they came to us and with a request that we would look at allowing them to use City Park and the library during the summertime to put on this festival, which would be 2 days. It would require, the biggest part of it is that there would be two night concerts with approximately 4,000 people. So that's a big commitment for the city to put on. It's a big commitment for them to work through the logistics of that. And so this was just to ask, does the council have an interest in moving forward with this? And we did come back and say, yes, we do. There are, however, some impacts that need to be worked through before we can really give the go-ahead. And some of those are, we still have kids camp going on. That one is really important to me. We have a lot of the workforce and a lot of our locals who use kids camp from 9 to 6 every single day for their children. So we do need to figure out a different location or how to accommodate those parents. The other one is there was a volleyball tournament that is scheduled there. So we would need to relocate the volleyball tournament. Troy, who's with our Public Works Department, spoke about the impacts that would happen to the grass field due to concerts. And we do have some history on that because in the past we have done concerts there. I think it was like 2017, 2018. I remember seeing the wallflowers there, I think. So we are aware of what can happen with the concerts. So we want to talk about that. And then we wanted to ensure they have a parking plan that is solid and they have agreements with either Park City Mountain Resort, the school, Deer Valley, whomever they decide to work with, but we have to have a parking plan and a very intricate plan to not affect the residents of Old Town by people going through Old Town to park in those neighborhoods. So we'll continue to see this evolve, but we've given direction that yes, we love this event. I absolutely love that they focus a lot on mental health issues and substance abuse issues. And so they bring a different perspective to an event where they're talking about issues that don't get talked about a lot.
My understanding is that the Song Summit is in fact a for-profit entity. And is it unusual for the city to be letting city facilities be used? I know a lot of times we let cities be used for not-for-profits. Isn't this different in kind and is this unusual?
I mean, maybe at this level, but people ask to use our facilities for like weddings and for different kinds of like team building experiences. And so I don't know that we have any sort of policy, and I'm not aware of any that would say we would only be using it for nonprofit.
Okay. Sundance.
It happened.
In its present incarnation for probably the next to the last time. Almost certainly in its present incarnation for the next
one more
last
year.
Time. Right. Observations about how it went?
Sure. So, as we know, I would give a heartfelt thank you to our team and to our police chief who worked diligently and around the clock when they made the decision to shut down Main Street. That was not an easy feat. That is something that should probably take months and months and months of preparation. They did it in 7 days. And for
that can be done in 7 days.
Yeah, sure, if you don't sleep. but they did, you know, I've heard a whole plethora of feedback from it. And I think it kind of depends on the type of business you have, where you're located on the street, and those have been, I've just heard a whole different array of comments of how it works for businesses. I will say what they did at the bottom of Main Street with the queuing and the Ubers was, I couldn't understand it when they showed it to us, and it worked phenomenally. So happy to see that. With the drop-ups up here, we did have some logistic issues to work through with Sweet Alley, but I think that it went as well as we most possibly could, and we'll see how that goes.
Given that experience, would you expect to leave it closed next year? Main Street.
So right now, I know that the HPCA, the Business Alliance for Main Street, is doing a survey of the businesses to see how that impacted them. I hope we use that information to lead to results of whether or not we want to continue that next year.
Okay. Anything I've forgotten to ask you about from last night?
No. I do want to invite everyone, though. Next week is our retreat. So once a year, the city council does a retreat that we get together for two full days of fun and exciting topics. And that will be on Thursday and Friday. And there will be many things discussed there, including the Main Street plan, the general plan, and a whole bunch of other things. So please tune in to those 2 days.
Okay. Tana Tola, thanks for spending time with us this
morning.
Yeah,
thanks, Roger. I appreciate it.
Well, the World Cup at Deer Valley features skiers propelled by gravity. Tomorrow in Salt Lake City, you can see skiers drawn by horses when Ski Touring comes riding into Salt Lake. Here to tell us about it is Salt Lake spokesperson Ryan Mack. Good morning, Ryan.
Hey, morning. Thanks for having me.
So, Ryan, let's start with some background. What is the Salt Lake Winter Roundup, and how does it relate to the days of 47 Rodeo?
Yeah, so this is our second year doing the Salt Lake Winter Roundup in partnership with the Utah Days of 47. They're an amazing partner of ours. And, you know, we think about what makes Salt Lake such an amazing destination. You know, you think of our heritage, you think of our arts and culture, and, of course, you can't forget sports in that. So this event really is a culmination of those three things. And it's kind of headlined by a ski drawing event, which will take place from approximately 1 to 3:30 tomorrow.
And I suspect there's many in this audience who do not know what ski drawing is. Can you tell us what it is and a little bit about the history of the sport?
Yeah, it actually has a pretty cool history. It's been around for a while. It's a Scandinavian word, skijoring. But it was actually an exhibition event in the 1928 Olympics. And, you know, you think of water skiing, so you're being pulled behind a boat on water skis. Well, this is very similar, except you switch out a boat for a horse and you water skis for real skis. So skiers go through a course, they hit jumps, there's mandatory turns, there's the hoops they have to collect. And so it's kind of based on time, and there's some style points thrown in there as well.
And are there multiple different events, or is there basically this one sort of competition that you just mentioned with jumps and hoops and turns?
Yep. So we will have different heats, and then the fans in the audience will determine who goes to the finals. So it's kind of like a bracket system, and they'll pick their favorite teams to move on to the finals.
Okay, so it's not the judges. It's kind of, it's more like American Idol. The audience actually votes.
Yep. I think, you know, we're a little more on the exhibition side. We're less serious about it, but the fans will determine who moves on to the finals down here.
Now, I have to ask you, this is, at least to me, a somewhat obscure sport. Is there a whole ski yoring subculture? Is there like a professional circuit of people who literally go around doing ski yoring events?
I believe so, especially in the West and up through Canada. But we worked with an organization called Ski Drawing Utah. They do events all throughout northern Utah. Next weekend, they have one up in Midway. That's kind of their flagship event. So they've been doing it for, you know, at least 10 years now, and are getting a pretty good following from it.
Okay, so as we talked about on this program a lot this morning, we got some fairly warm weather. Right now, it's kind of slushy. How do things look on the course? Are you going to be okay tomorrow with this weather?
We're going to be okay. You know, it's been a really strange weather week that has caused some logistical challenges, but we had a good plan in place, and snow is on the ground now. You know, it's a little warm downtown right now, but luckily this is the warmest it's going to be all day, and we're going to see some dropping temperatures, maybe a little rain mixed with snow, and then freezing temperatures overnight. So the course is going to hold up through tomorrow very nicely.
So where physically in the course? Do you guys, like, have to bulldoze snow onto a street in downtown Salt Lake City?
Yep. So we partner with Solitude Mountain Resort and Staker Parson, who has a contract with them to already move their parking lot and village snow. So they've been setting aside snow from that, and that's the snow we use to build the course down in downtown.
And which streets is the course? Which streets do we find the course?
Yes, it is on West Temple, between South Temple and First South. So kind of right in front of the Salt Palace, sandwiched between Abravanel Hall and City Creek Center.
And that's where where can people go tomorrow to see the event? Do they just sort of park around there and walk? Are there stands? How does it work?
Yeah, we've got full bleacher seating. I would recommend parking at City Creek. They have free two-hour parking. Obviously, great tracks, light rail system, so ride public transit where appropriate. So there's a lot of options to park and then walk over because it's a free event.
Okay, let's talk about what else is going on in the event. You've got the ski drawing. Are there food trucks? Are there other fun things for people to do?
Yeah, absolutely. We have R&R Barbecue. They're bringing down a big old smoker. We'll have several food trucks, so people, you know, don't need to worry about where their food's coming from, plus so many great restaurants just downtown anyway. We'll have a vendor village with kind of different activations. So last year, it was kind of just the ski drawing event. I like to say it literally was our first rodeo last year. And we didn't know how many people were going to show up. We thought maybe, you know, 2,500, 3,000 people. We had close to 10,000, so we knew we had to come back bigger and better, and so we programmed a full day of activities. So it runs from 9 to 5. Ski drawing is from 1 to 3. But there will be different musical performances provided by Salt Lake County Arts and Culture, kind of rodeo games, trick horses. So there's going to be a lot of stuff going on all day.
Okay. I take it there's no opportunity for those of us who want to try ski drawing to do an amateur run.
Not this year, unfortunately. Okay. It's something we're talking about.
But, is it really?
Yeah.
All right. Anything else you want to share with the audience about the event before we go?
No, it's quite the spectacle. So if you can make it, come on down. We'd love to have you.
All right. Thanks for spending time with us this morning.
Yep. Thank you so much.
Well, after collapsing under record snow, local preservationists are working to restore the historic Thanes Hoist House at Park City Mountain. KPCW's Parker Malatesta reports.
Once the hub of mining operations and later a skier's subway, the Thanes Hoist House dates back to 1937. It's one of many historic structures that dot the terrain at Park City Mountain. The structure's roof collapsed under 12 feet of snow following the winter of 2022-2023, which brought record snowfall to Utah. In August, Park City's Historic Preservation Board approved an $18,000 grant to begin restoring the damaged building, which was once the western shaft of the Silver King Coalition Mine. An engineer's report in October found that part of the structure cannot be salvaged for reconstruction, but they said other portions can be rebuilt. Brian Buck with Friends of Ski Mountain Mining History told the Historic Preservation Board Wednesday crews worked last year to disassemble and remove the collapsed roof.
We are now doing conceptual designs and cost estimates to support fundraising for us to raise the funds to repair that hoist house.
Buck said the nonprofit is aiming to submit plans for permitting and construction by the end of this year. The hope is that the rebuild will replicate the facility's original design. Under their plan, remaining cleanup work could be done by next summer, allowing for reconstruction to begin in 2026. The group plans to install a security system around the historic structure, which is nestled in Thanes Canyon, when work is complete. Parker Malatesta, KPCW News.
Well, the Heber City attorney determined a citizen effort to put a recent annexation to a vote cannot legally go forward. KPCW's Grace Dorfler has this.
A small group of Heber residents filed a referendum petition last month over the future of the North Village, around 95 acres of land at the intersection of US 40 and River Road. The residents wanted to undo the Heber City Council's decision in late December to annex the land. A month later, on January 21st, the council voted 4-1 to approve plans for two developments, Crossings and Harvest Village. Housing, hotels, and recreation amenities will be constructed there. On Wednesday, Heber City leaders told KPCW the referendum cannot proceed. Here's Heber's Public Information Officer, Ryan Bunnell.
The Utah State Legislature has some very specific requirements with regards to referendums of this nature. Technically, Heber City Council accepted the annexation petition on December 17th. December 17th is when the 5-day period for submittal of referendum needed to be filed.
He says when the city attorney took a close look at state law, he determined the petitioners missed the deadline to ask for a referendum. The citizens argued the timeline started in January, since the city council made the annexation contingent upon approving the master development agreements. City leaders disagreed. Referendum petition organizers didn't immediately respond to KPCW's requests for comment Thursday. Bunnell said the city was still glad to see residents get involved and exercise their rights. Plans for the North Village will reshape the northern entrance to Heber City. Council members who voted in favor of the plans said they supported the annexation and development agreements because it gives the city a say in what kind of growth will be constructed there. They also said months of negotiations with the developers resulted in plans that better matched the community, with more open space and stronger affordable housing requirements. Both developments will include over 50% open space. City leaders who opposed the plans, meanwhile, said they didn't agree with the amount of density granted for the communities. The land is part of the county's North Village Overlay Zone, so it has long been envisioned as a spot for new growth to be constructed. Grace Dorfler, KPCW News.
Summer in Park City means outdoor concerts. Here to give us a preview of this summer's concert lineup is Park City Performing Arts Director of Fun, Amber Conley. Morning, Amber.
Morning, Roger.
Thanks for being here. Okay, Amber, what have you announced so far for this summer?
Absolutely. So our first concert, July the 12th, we're kicking off Strings on the Slopes with Carolyn Campbell. She's an internationally known violinist, and she's playing with William Joseph, who is just an amazing classical slash, he's sponsored over Yamaha, pianist. So they're playing together. And then we have a local group out of Salt Lake called Strings FX, and they're going to be opening for Carolyn and William. So that's July the 12th.
What kind of music is that, Amber?
You know, they go between classical, and then they go into full, like, rock. I was watching one of their YouTubes, and it was AC/DC, and it is phenomenal. Okay. So check out their YouTube. They're amazing.
And I'm not going to understand anything about the next group till I hear it from you.
Okay, which is the next group?
Well, what's the next concert?
Well, the next group is August the 7th, Diamond Rio.
Oh, I was skipping right to Gin Blossom. Sorry.
Yeah, you got to get to August 7th. So August 7th, so I will do a little plug. August 7th, 8th, and 9th, we are doing a country fest, and we are going to be putting on a country fest package. I can't announce the next two acts on August 8th and 9th, but I can tell you Diamond Rio is going to be on Thursday, August 7th. They're a, you know, 80s, 90s, strong country band, well-known, and they're going to be phenomenal.
Okay, so this is new to do a three-day festival. So it's just going to be three consecutive nights of different concerts?
It is.
Go ahead.
Well, and, you know, we have some new country coming in, and then we have our classical country, and then someone kind of in between. These are all confirmed acts. I'm just not ready to announce it quite yet.
Okay.
And then, of course, the one that you're looking forward to, August 28th, which is Labor Day weekend, Blues Traveler and Gin Blossoms. So there is a little bit of confusion around them. So Spin Doctors is actually traveling with them on the majority of this tour, with the exception of two places, and we're one of the two places. So, but the headliners are Blues Traveler and Gin Blossoms. Tickets go on today for all three of these. They went on sale yesterday for our members, and we are really excited to have Blues Traveler and Gin Blossoms.
And Amber, just remind people about the venue. I attended a concert too last year, and it's a pretty remarkable the way that venue works.
It is, and you know, I think I've got to do a shout out to CVMA and Park City Mountain. They have worked really hard on creating a summer concert experience. And this experience includes easy parking, phenomenal restaurant out on the plaza, as well as food available inside the venue. And of course, you're allowed to pack a picnic. You know, the rule in Utah is no alcohol, but there's alcohol available at the venue. And the best part is first of all, you're on an incredible outside venue. The views are amazing. But then once the concert's over, easy to get out. I mean, you know, we live about 15 minutes from the venue. We're home in 20 to 22 minutes. It is just phenomenal. And we have great partners on the mountain with Pendry, of course, with the local hotels. And we are working with our local hotels again to offer discounted hotel packages. So that's going to be available on our website very soon.
And can you give the audience a sense of the different kinds of tickets that are available? I understand there are obviously reserved and lawn seats.
There is. So we have about 500 reserved seats in the front. And this year, we continue each year to work with CVMA and Park City Mountain to improve the venue. And this year is no different. There's going to be some great improvements to being able to just to accessibility. you know, once being there, you just have this amazing experience.
Okay. Before we go, can you sort of tease us as to when you're going to be able to release information about more concerts? I assume you're planning more things for the summer.
We are. We have 10 concerts completely confirmed. And next week, we're going to be releasing one more. Of course, it'll be the same as what we have with our members. So member sales go on earlier, and then we'll release the next one next Friday. I will do save the date. So if you're looking out there going, okay, we really like the venue and we love all the concerts. So we have July 12th, we have July 18th, the 25th, and the 26th of July. We have an August 1st date, of course, the Country Fest, August 7th, 8th, and 9th. We have an August 22nd, and then, of course, that Thursday night, August 28th of Labor Day weekend.
Ember, thanks for sharing all that with us.